Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and to the fastest growing segment of society. To those of you like me who've come to know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand what they are doing and why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant, even treacherous schemes, even if those schemes are religious or patriotic, isn't hateful, the most caring and compassionate thing we can do, the wisest thing we can do. In our second hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, particularly the prophecy regarding how the Syrian war leads to the divestiture of Israeli land and then to an Islamic assault on Israel, because that prophecy tells us the future that awaits us. It also tells us how America is going to be complicit in the evil that will beset this planet during the last days. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it is 877-300-7645. It is my pleasure to be able to welcome a good friend, a gentleman I have known for a very long time, an individual I've come to respect, a man whose books I have read. IQ Howard Rasuli to the program. IQ is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. I don't think there's anyone in the world today that understands the consequence of us accepting Islam, of us tolerating Islam, than this man. IQ, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
IQ, I would like to discuss the three articles that all were published yesterday and get your take on them. The first of those is a movie. It's called Honor Diaries. Have you heard of it?
I've seen it.
You've actually seen it, okay. I have not seen it.
I've seen it on YouTube.
Oh, okay. I have not seen it, so you're going to be leading us through this discussion. As I understand it, it probes the violence against Muslim women. And the violence against Muslim women, in terms of just the worst form of violence, comes principally in two ways. One is female genital mutilation, and the second is called honor killings. Does the film present both?
Yes, but mostly the genital mutilation.
Okay. Is there a correlation between Islam and female genital mutilation?
It's practiced by Muslims more than anybody else.
The country, perhaps you're not aware of this, but if you're not, I'll have the answer, but I'd just like to see if you do know. The country that performs the most female genital mutilations, you know what that country is?
No.
Egypt. Egypt. 91% of Egyptian girls are mutilated. What percentage is the Islamic population of Egypt?
Almost 90%.
Yeah, I think it's actually between 90 and 91%. It was almost 90% until recently when there's been a hunting spree out for Christians, and Muslims, of course, are breeding like rabbits. Direct correlation, then, in Egypt between female genital mutilation. This is the number one country in the world for this, female genital mutilation and Islam. 91% of the population experiences it, and the population is between 90 and 91% Islamic. Would you call that a fairly high level of correlation, particularly in a large country?
Well, if it's not a high level, people have got to be demented not to accept it as high level. It is high level. It's extremely dangerous.
Yes. Let's talk about a few other countries where according to UNICEF, there is a high rate of female mutilation. It's between 98 and 99% of the women in Somalia. Do you know what percentage of the population of Somalia is Muslim?
100%.
Yeah, it's just a shade below that, but it's not
below 100%.
I think it is. In fact, I'll give you the exact number. It is 98.6.
Thank you.
So in Somalia, it's 98.6, and they have 98% genital mutilation. In Guinea, it's 96%, and the percentage of Muslims is the same. And Djibouti, 93%, same percentage of Muslim population. Mali, 89%, same percentage of Islamic population. Sierra Leone, same thing. The Sudan, the percentage and the percentage of Muslims, right across the board. In fact, in every significant country where it occurs, the percentage of the occurrence in the Islamic population is the same.
Yeah, do you mind if you explain to our listeners what genital mutilation is?
Why don't you?
I don't even know what it means.
You know, it's practiced to a significant degree in Iraq. You're an Iraqi. Why don't you tell our listeners what it is?
They cut the clitoris of the female, right, so that she doesn't enjoy sex except when she is with her husband.
Oh, but
no, you know,
that is correct. When a girl is cut in this way, which is there's a direct correlation between Islam and this act. It is one of the most sickening things you can do. It's extraordinarily painful. The death rates are actually high when it's performed. It is performed by Muslim mothers holding down their daughters, and it is designed to make certain that an Islamic girl will never enjoy sex, which means that she becomes nothing more than a sex object. It's irreversible, which means she will not enjoy sex even when she's married. She is nothing but, you know, about the equivalent of a blow-up doll for a Muslim man.
Well,
ceases to be a partner.
All females, according to Islam, are one step higher up the ladder of evolution than domestic animals, all females. And we're talking about now 750 million human beings.
Yes.
I want to put it in perspective. 750 million, which is 50% of the Islamic population on Earth. 750 million people.
It's,
and yet, they are in denial.
They're in denial. As a matter of fact, isn't the Council for American Islamic Relations having a conniption fit over this film and boycotting it, writing letters to advertisers and the like, saying that this film does not represent Islam?
Yeah. I wish I were an American citizen. I would take those sons of bitches, excuse my language. I mean it. I would take them to court, and in 10 minutes, I will ask them simple questions, and they will self-destruct. Why? I'll explain it to you, with all due respect.
Mm-hmm.
I will ask them, are you Muslims? They have to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you abide by Quran and Sunnah? They have to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you abide then by Sharia? Because Sharia is based on Quran and Sunnah. They say yes.
Yes, actually based about...
Immediately.
Yeah. It's actually based about 90%, maybe 98% on the Sunnah, which is the Hadith. There's really very little in the Quran that is usable as it relates to Islamic law, because, as you know, the first three quarters of the Quran chronologically is nothing but a never-ending argument between Muhammad and his neighbors, those who knew him best, and there's nothing useful in it. And the last quarter of the Quran is all about Allah's rage against first Jews and then Christians and then against his Muhammad's former neighbors. So there's not a lot in the Quran that can be used, but boy, do you have plenty from Muhammad's words and deeds. And Muhammad was a swell guy, wasn't he?
So when they say, yes, they abide by Sharia, then I tell them you are pathological liars,
mm-hmm.
you are traitors to the American people,
right,
and you are traitors to the American Constitution. And mm-hmm. by the way, within 10 minutes, the game is over.
Yeah, they will have to admit.
Do I make myself clear, or do I not make myself clear?
Yeah, they will have to admit that they are. I, very early on, right after I wrote Prophet of Doom, I debated the head of CARE. And, well, it is almost impossible to win a debate because of the fact that most listeners are unaware of the terms of debate. They're unaware of logical fallacy, and they lack the information necessary to be able to ascertain who is telling the truth and who is lying. For example, if you say, do you abide by Sharia? Well, they will say yes, that 99% of the listeners haven't a clue what Sharia is. They don't know that it's based upon the words and deeds of the most repulsive man who ever lived, a fellow who took incest and pedophilia and rape and made it an art form, a man who was a mass murderer, a ruthless terrorist, a slave trader, and a kidnapper. And most Americans can't even fathom that you could have a legal system based upon the life and words of such a repulsive individual. So it's difficult to win a debate when the audience is as ignorant as most people are today. However, the one debate I would tell you was just an absolute annihilation is that one. I mean, he absolutely gave up. As a matter of fact, we were scheduled to have another debate. This one on one of America's top five radio syndicated shows in the country. It was on the Gallagher Show, which is about fifth nationally in terms of audience size. And this was live. A huge arena had been arranged. I flew in for it. Gallagher was there broadcasting remotely from, it was in Iowa, this large arena. And the two chairs were set up. I was there with all of my Islamic books, the Quran and Hadith collections. And guess who didn't show up? Didn't even tell Gallagher that he wasn't showing up, the head of CARE. So you're correct. He said, the floor is yours. Obviously, your opponent didn't show up. We'll allow people to call in to debate you, but obviously the floor is yours. And so I spent 2 hours speaking about Islam.
Wow. Give me 20 minutes, for God's sake. I need 20 minutes on television.
Yep. When we return to Shattering Myths, we will transition away from female genital mutilation, which is wholly Islamic, and the moronic response to it by the Council for American Islamic Relations that doesn't want you to understand this correlation, and to honor killings, which are almost always also exclusively Islamic. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion with the foremost expert on Islam, I think, in the world today, IQ Al-Rasuli. I have a couple of questions here for you, IQ. First, you have identified female genital mutilation as, in fact, let me just go ahead and read the World Health Organization's depiction of it. It's very similar to your own. It's the partial or total removal of the external female genitalia and injury to other female genital organs for non-medical reasons. It is common in 27 countries in sub-Saharan and northeastern Africa, as well as Yemen and Iraqi Kurdistan. Those countries are all Islamic. If, IQ, 125 little girls were mutilated in this way, would that be an important story?
Even if it's one girl, to me, as far as I'm concerned,
okay. Right.
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, one girl being mutilated in this way is worth noting. 125 being mutilated in this way would be a serious problem that we as a world ought to want to deal with, right?
Absolutely right.
If there were 125,000 little girls alive today that had their mothers hack at and cut off their genitals, would that be maybe one of the most important stories of today that a caring world ought to be concerned about and want to stop? 125,000?
I agree with you, but especially among the females, the liberated females of the West who say they are for feminism, but they are very silent about genital mutilation in America.
You know how many girls alive today have had their genitals cut off by as a religious act by their mothers? It's not 125. It's not 125,000.
125 million.
That is correct. 125 million. So this is something that ought to tear out your heart. This is something that ought to make you want to scream. If you are human, if you have a conscience, if you are capable of executing reasonable judgment, you ought to care about this issue. There'd be very few issues in the world today that ought to be as important to resolving as this one. 125 million little girls.
Mutilated.
Mutilated by their mothers. All right.
By the way, with all due respect, they're not only mutilated physically, they are mutilated psychologically for the rest of their life.
Correct. They are told that you don't matter, that men control you. And if you show any resistance to that, we'll not just cut your genitals, we'll cut off your head. Now, the film, Honor Diaries, showcases 9 Muslim women who speak about their experiences with such things, and between their stories, which are accurately presented, the film weaves in the experiences of activists and experts on the topic. So it's an extraordinarily important thing for people to see, particularly as they're being educated. So the film was scheduled to be presented at the University of Michigan. But CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, objected. They started threatening the university, and they started threatening the sponsors of the film. And the University of Michigan and the University of Illinois both canceled their screenings.
By the way, the guilt does not reside with CARE.
No.
The guilt resides with the universities.
Both. University of Michigan is the top 5 universities, maybe even the top 3 public universities in America, is guilty. They have committed a heinous crime. They have shown themselves to be complete ignoramuses, complete hypocrites, and morally deranged. That's what they have demonstrated.
Important. They are complicit.
Correct.
They are complicit by their inaction in the destruction of female lives.
Correct.
They are complicit.
Now, you know, you and I get emotional about this. We get angry. You know, typically, I don't get very angry on the radio. I present stuff. I show it. I reveal how disgusting it is. And I go on to the next topic. There are 2 things that I find to be the most telling of the moral depravity of a society. One is the abuse of women. And the other is is anti-Semitism. When societies devolve into either of these, when those traits are prevalent, you know that that society is despicable. They are the telltale signs of depravity. This is an extremely important issue. Those who are vulnerable are being abused. 125 million of them. And the University of Michigan and the University of Illinois wouldn't even show the documentary. What's wrong with us? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Ibrahim Hooper, who is the head of the Council on American Islamic Relations, called CARE, an advocacy group for all that ails Islam, said that they did not cancel the screenings. They simply pointed out to the sponsors that the agenda of the film's producers was Islamic phobic, and that the documentary did not present the issue fairly. Now, when you're talking about female genital mutilation, is it even possible to have the discussion without indicting Islam?
No, it's impossible. Islam is guilty. Full stop. They are always guilty. Full stop. But they always blame the victim. Also full stop. Why? Muhammad did that 1400 years ago. They have to follow the rule. They always speak about Islamophobia. Nobody asked Hooper, what does Islamophobia mean in the English language? Nobody.
Right.
Somebody should ask him, what does phobia mean? He will tell you fear. But it isn't fear. It is irrational fear. Read it. It's in the English dictionary. Right. Arachnophobia, fear of spiders. It is irrational. Well, it is not irrational to fear someone who wants you dead. Islam wants us all dead.
You know, I'm going to take a different approach on that. The people like you and I, and the people who produced this movie, which shows the direct and undeniable correlation between Islam and female genital mutilation. 91% of the Egyptian population is Islamic. 91% of the girls in Egypt have their genitals mutilated. And that's the largest of the Middle Eastern Islamic countries. Those of us who do what we are doing, who tell people the truth and are not afraid to tell people the truth, have the least fear of Islam. If you feared Islam, my friend, you would never do what you're doing. I've had 1,000 death threats from Muslims. I don't fear them. It's my lack of fear of Islam that causes me to be willing to do this. It's exactly the opposite of what Ibrahim Hooper claims. Now, is it appropriate to, let's take a different approach. Let's say that he actually said a hate of Islam. Is it appropriate to hate that which mutilates little girls?
Yes, it is appropriate. Not only hate, despise, loathe, right, and destroy.
Right. To expose. In fact, if you're a moral...
More emotional than I am, I must apologize.
Right. Yeah.
But I come from Iraq.
Right.
And being of Arab background, we're very emotional people.
Yeah, but it's the only mature, moral, rational response to 125 million girls being mutilated by their mothers in the name of this disgusting religion is to be disgusted by the religion, to despise it. If you don't hate it, there's something wrong with you. Now, let's turn to the other issue that was raised during this movie, which is honor killings. There are less of them than the prevalence of female genital mutilation, but let me ask you a question. If an Islamic girl in an Islamic country, one governed by Sharia law, there's 50 of them, if she is walking down the street, and let's say she's wearing the full Islamic regalia, she is covered from head to toe, even her eyes are behind mesh. And a Muslim man, or even a group of Muslims, decides to pull her aside and to rape her. And there's a trial to deal with the consequence of the rape. It is absolutely known who was raped and who did the raping. Who's going to be convicted, the victim or the perpetrator?
The victim, the woman, always the woman.
But how could that be? How could the victim of the rape be the one that's convicted?
Yeah.
Because, but it's true.
She asked for it.
According to Islam.
Sharia, she asked for it.
Right.
Although she was covered from head to toe, she asked for it.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is rape, according to the Quran, which says that men are authorized to have sex with their slaves, which is rape. That's involuntary sex. And Muhammad himself engaged in rape. So rape is authorized for men. There is no penalty because they're following the example of Muhammad. But when a woman is raped, she has engaged in extramarital sex, which means that she is guilty and will be killed. That's how perverted this religion is.
Yes, but it's even more perverted. Because the Quran does not stipulate a death penalty for extramarital relationship. It says 100 lashes only. But the Muslim exegetes follow Muhammad's Sunnah, which is contrary to the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
So they're breaking the rule of the Quran in the name of Muhammad.
Yeah, to follow the Sunnah, which is presented in the Hadith. Something I've always said, and I know that I'm a broken record on this, but it's extremely important to recognize. While Muslims will claim that the only authorized scripture for them is the Quran and that their lives are guided by the Quran, it is untrue.
It's not true. You're You're absolutely right. It's a lie.
It's a lie. It is the Sunnah, which is based entirely on hadith or reports from Muhammad and his companions, as they were collected principally into four collections, two chronological, two topical, by Bukhari and Muslim, by Ibn Ishaq, and by Tabari. One being the Sirah or biography of Muhammad, the other being the Tariq or the history of Islam. Those four collections are the basis of Sharia law. They're the basis of the Islamic religion. They all take precedence over the Quran. And therefore, the books that you and I have written, Prophet of Doom, which uses the hadith to set the Quran in chronological order and to set it into the context of Muhammad's life, and your topical presentations of these materials are essential reading if you want to have any concept as to what's happening in the world and how evil this religion is. I want to turn to the honor killings. There are reports that 13 women a day are killed in honor killings, about 5,000 a year by some other estimates. I did a fair amount of research into this. There are approximately 5,000 Islamic honor killings in the West alone, most of them taking place in England. And that number only represents the honor killings that are reported and that where there are convictions and that are in the West, because we haven't a clue, because there is no free press as to what's happening in the 50 Islamic nations. Isn't that accurate?
This is absolutely accurate. And even in the West, it's not always reported that she was murdered for honor killing. She was murdered for something else, but there are honor killing. By the way, this word honor killing, they have no honor, the Muslim men, because in reality, since the days of Muhammad, the honor of a Muslim man resides in the genitals or in the vagina of their females. While in the meantime, a Muslim man will rape a non-Muslim woman, a Christian, a Buddhist, or a Hindu, without compassion, without mercy. But if a Muslim woman goes out with a Christian boy, even if they didn't have sex, they kill her.
As a matter of fact, rape has been a common tactic of Islamic mujahideen and jihadists throughout the last 1,400 years. They are authorized by their prophet's example to rape the women that they conquer. That's what Muhammad did. After every conquest with Muhammad, the women were divvied up, the men were killed, the children were enslaved, and the women were divvied up. There was a system where they threw lots. Muhammad got the first choice as to which women he wanted to rape, and then his jihadists got to throw lots for which women they would rape after Muhammad. And if you look at the Syrian proxy war, it's exactly what's happening there. It's happening throughout Islam today. It is the history of Islam. And so for Abraham Hooper to complain about this and to say that it's being presented unfairly, being associated with Islam, there's only one other religion in the world today that practices honor killings, and they represent about 5% of the honor killings worldwide. And that's Hinduism and in certain sects in India. And it's despicable there. But it's just like female genital mutilation. If you were to end the Islamic influence over either of these two things, you would reduce their tendency, their propensity to occur, by between 95 and 100%. That's the reality. We have Glenn on the line. I'd like him to be able to make a statement or ask you a question, IQ. Hello, Glenn. Well, we had Glenn, but he's not there right now. IQ, this idea that the victim of rape is either incarcerated for life, receives countless lashings, or in most cases is killed, typically stoned to death in an Islamic country. Haven't we had an eyeful of that in Afghanistan, a country where Western media now reside because of America's invasion? Doesn't it happen every day there?
It happens every day in Muslim countries, by the way. In Iran, it happens. They're hanging more men They, by the way, they have hanged more so-called homosexual men in Iran than in totality of the Muslim world, only in Iran. Anybody they don't like, they say he's a homosexual, and they hang him. By the way, homosexuality was part and parcel of Islam.
Yeah, it is amazing.
In the Quran, but it was practiced for the last 1400 years. And they continue to be practiced as we speak today. But they will not say it, because they are, after all, Muslims, and right. They abhor homosexuality.
You know, it's not true. You know, in fact, in Afghanistan, one of the reasons that American returning GIs are so disgusted by Afghanistan and Afghani men is that when they turned over a community to the Afghani police after pushing the Taliban out of a community, one of the very first things the Afghan police would do, and they did it in virtually every community, is they would search going home to home to find the cutest young boys. And then they would take those young boys to their encampments, and they would rape them. They called it bachi ba. And it occurred with such regularity that Americans decided, you know, the Taliban is much better for these people than are the Afghani police. And IQ, what we find, too, in every report out of Afghanistan, is the American invasion in Afghanistan, rather than solving the honor killings of Afghani girls, has exacerbated the problem. It's much worse today. Welcome back. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, it's something that I say regularly, and this is a point that helps to underscore it. I tell America that we made a bad situation much worse with our invasion of both Iraq and Afghanistan. They were counterproductive in both situations. Bad situations existed. We made them much worse. But the fact that Afghani women are now treated much worse than they were by the Taliban suggests that statement is irrefutable. I mean, what more important thing could we have done than to prevent the maltreatment of women, and yet every report says that more women are abused and more severely abused now with America's intervention than occurred previously.
Yes, the abuse is because the women are trying to assert themselves, which is contrary to Islamic rule of the men.
Yeah.
So the reaction by the men becomes even more extreme. Before they were compliant. Before they were subservient, before they were domestic animals. When America went in, they opened their eyes, they want to assert themselves, they are now in the police, they are in education, they are in the universities. The moment, in next few months, even after the presidential elections, the Taliban will take over.
Yeah.
There's no way on earth they will have a democracy. None whatsoever.
Yeah, the Taliban is simply going to return. It'll be just like Vietnam all over again. The Taliban will return, and all of those girls that dared to go to school, that dared to work,
will be destroyed.
They'll be killed, won't they?
Yes, they will be destroyed.
Yeah, by the thousands.
Yes.
There's another story out of Indonesia, and then I want to take Glenn's call here, that an Indonesian woman needed 1.8 million, according to the Saudi Arabians, in blood money to prevent her execution. She was going to be beheaded in the next few days. And the Indonesians, also Muslims, are trying to raise $1.8 million to hold off her execution by beheading. Do you know this story?
Yes. She had an abusive Muslim woman.
Yes.
Although she is herself Muslim. But that's what happens even in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
They bring women from all over the world to work as servants. They rape them. They abuse them. When she had enough, she counterattacked the woman and by mistake caused her brain damage and then death.
Yeah. And in this case, it's not isolated at all. In fact, most countries around the world now will not even allow women to go as the domestic servants to Saudi Arabia because the prevalence of abuse is so widespread. They advertise in these other countries for women to work in their personal homes. And then when they come, they tear up the contract. They become slaves. They pay them nothing. They steal their, confiscate their documents. They can't go home. And they're just savage. I mean, far worse than you can ever imagine.
But that's happening under the watch of Obama. And he says nothing. He went to Saudi Arabia to discuss peace.
And kowtowed to the King Abdullah as if as if he was this wonderful, loving, and wise man, when he is responsible not only for the fundamentalist mocks that, that fuel Islamic terrorism around the world, but also for creating the culture where domesticated servants from around the world are considered slaves, but not just slaves. I mean, they are abused beyond anything you can imagine. Nails driven into them, burned, raped, mutilated, whipped. Inhuman savagery is being perpetrated against them in this personal fiefdom that we call Saudi Arabia. Hello, Glenn. Maybe we have a better phone and a better connection. You have a question or a comment for IQ?
Yes. Hello, IQ.
And it's on the phone. It's all right. Thanks. It's in the switching somewhere because I was on the regular phone and I'm on AT&T with a state of the art phone, and you know, this has happened before. I'm going hello, I'm here, doing it.
Go ahead. What's your question for IQ?
Well, first of all, personally, I've always felt that more than 20 lashes for a rape victim was sort of excessive, you know.
for a rape victim, yeah. I would go along with that, too, for a rape victim.
Yeah. The this whole thing with the female circumcision, I'm thinking about the culture clash, the allegations of being phobic. You know, if one is morally indignant about specific behaviors, one is not phobic of a group or an ideology, you know. Like, they're naming specific actions, saying these are reprehensible, and they're playing this stupid phobia game. It's just a lie.
It's like it's like homophobia. You know, I don't personally agree with homosexuality. I don't care what somebody does. If you want to be a homosexual, that is, you know, your choice. But just because I don't agree with the behavior doesn't mean I'm afraid of it. It's absurd, the titles that we use today.